In the section on diffusive transport, we had this picture that you have a charge in a diffusive material, and it gets accelerated by the electric field, and then it scatters. So in between scattering events, it follows a parabola, like it was ballistic transport. And then it scatters, goes off in a random direction, and the electric field pulls it around in the direction the electric field is pushing it, and then it scatters again. And when you analyze that, you find that the average velocity, called the drift velocity, for electrons is minus the direction of the electric field, and there's this mobility constant. So this, the mobility dependent on the effective mass and the scattering time, but the average velocity is proportional to the electric field. And this turns out to be true for low electric fields. So this is a plot of the drift velocity versus the electric field. And the solid line here is for silicon, and this is for electrons in silicon. This is electrons in gallium arsenide. These are holes in silicon, and these are holes in gallium arsenide. And you get just this linear proportionality where you can describe it with this formula up until a critical electric field. And at the critical electric field, the velocity of the electron in the hole starts to saturate. So at high velocities, there's more dissipation somehow. There's more friction. And even though you increase the electric field, they don't go very much faster. And the charge carriers and semiconductors tend to saturate about 10 to the 7 centimeters per second. That's 1/1000th of the speed of light. It's not really relativistic. In vacuum, it's easy to accelerate electrons much closer to the speed of light. But in semiconductors, there's this there's extra friction at high velocities. And it has to do with the optical phonons. So there are phonons in the crystal, and both silicon and gallium arsenide have an optical branch. If I draw the phonon dispersion curve, they're both FCC. So I'll draw gamma L X, and L is closer to gamma than X is. So then the phonon dispersion curves start out linear, and then they bend over and hit the Brillouin zone boundary. In the other direction, it's got the same slope, linear slope at the beginning, but goes a little bit higher over here. These are what the optical branches are. And there would be acoustic and longitudinal loads. And then at higher frequencies, there are the acoustic branches, so which look something like this, the acoustic branches. And the density of states that goes along with this, the phonon density of states, as a function of frequency, here's frequency. It starts out like omega squared, and then there's some structure, stops. For gallium arsenide, there's a small gap. For silicon, the gap is basically zero. These are the acoustic modes. And every time there's an acoustic mode, there's an optical mode. So the optical phonons have the same area as this area, but are concentrated in a narrower frequency range. You just see it here. They're in a narrower frequency range than the acoustic ones. And it gives a higher peak. Now, when electrons scatter, one of the things they can do is emit a phonon. This is the heat that gets generated when you put a current through a conductor. The electric field accelerates the electrons, and then they emit a phonon, and the material heats up. But for low velocities here, the optical phonons are not excited, because the optical phonons have a certain energy. The energy of an optical phonon is h bar omega, where omega is the frequency. And all the optical phonons are up at high frequencies. And in the first part of this curve, the optical phonons don't participate, because this is greater than the kinetic energy. So the kinetic energy is the drift velocity squared times the mass, and half the mass times the drift velocity squared, like this. And if the energy of an optical phonon is greater than the average energy of the electrons, the optical phonons are just not, they don't participate. And then at one point, the energy of the electrons gets up to the energy of the optical phonons, and there's a lot more resistance because the electrons scatter more easily. They emit these optical phonons. And that causes a saturation of the velocity of the electrons. We can estimate how what kind of electric fields would be in a transistor. In a modern transistor, the distance between the source and drain that the electrons travel is about 15 nanometers. These are transistors in production. 15 is inconvenient, we'll say 10 nanometers. So 10 nanometers is 10 to the minus 8 meters, or 10 to the minus 6 centimeters. And the voltage applied across a modern transistor is about 1 volt. So we get an electric field of 1 divided by 10 to the minus 6 is 10 to the 6 volts per centimeter, which is right here on my plot. So modern transistors are up in this regime where the electrons in holes are traveling at the saturation velocity. If you put them through a bit of semiconductor that's longer than the scattering distance, right? If the gate length, the distance between source and drain, is only 10 nanometers, they may not scatter at all and just go ballistically from one side to the other. But if it's longer, then they'll be traveling at that kind of electric field at the saturation velocity. And this slows down the maximum speed of a transistor. So the electrons have a maximum velocity that it takes them to get from one side of the transistor to the other. And you could make a faster transistor if you could find a material where the electrons go faster. So in order to try to find a material like that, we should take a semiconductor that doesn't have optical branches. And because this problem is coming because of these phonons in the optical branches. And we can look then for a semiconductor that doesn't have that. In order not to have optical branches, there can only be one atom in the basis. If there's one atom in the basis, then there's no optical branch, and we wouldn't have this problem. So if there's only one atom in the basis, it must be one of the elements. That's the only way you could have a semiconductor like that. So we look at the periodic table, and the naturally occurring semiconductors in the periodic table are all in column 4. Carbon, germanium, carbon, silicon, germanium, and then tin. Tin at low temperatures is a semiconductor. And they all naturally form the diamond structure. The diamond has two atoms in the basis, so they're optical phonons. So the only way we could find a semiconductor without optical phonons is now to go to this plot of the free energies of different crystal structures of the atoms. So we look at silicon and try to see, people calculated what the free energy is of silicon in other crystal structures, not diamond, not the one it naturally forms, but also other ones. And you can look to see if there's one which doesn't have two atoms in the basis. And if there is, you might be able to stabilize that structure in a thin film form by starting with a substrate that has the same crystal structure and trying to grow silicon on top of it. And you might be able to get silicon without optical phonons in it. I looked in that plot and I didn't see any structures without two atoms in the basis. So it seems that we're doomed in semiconductors always to have these optical phonons, which slows the electrons down. And then gallium arsenide does a very funny thing. So you take, you apply an electric field, and the bigger the electric field, the faster the electrons go, until there's a critical electric field, which isn't really that high, where they travel at maximum velocity, and then they start going slower. You apply more electric field, and the electrons go more slowly in gallium arsenide. And the The way to understand that is to look at the band structure of gallium arsenide, which is over here. And the gallium arsenide is a direct band gap semiconductor. It's got a pretty sharp minimum here at gamma, at k equals zero. That's the conduction band minimum. So it's fairly sharp, so the electrons have a low effective mass. And electrons with a low effective mass move faster than electrons with a high effective mass. And when you apply a large electric field, what happens is that some of the electrons start to get scattered from this minima into the other ones. So there's a minimum out in the 111 direction, there's also a different minimum out in the 100 direction. And by this high energy scattering, electrons get scattered into these other minima, and you can see by looking at them, they have a heavier effective mass. And then the drift velocity is the average over the different electrons moving in these different minima. And the consequence is that by scattering the electrons up into these higher energy minima causes the average velocity in gallium arsenide to decrease. Okay, so this is what happens at high field, optical phonons and effective mass.